eventuell seger eller vad är frågan om? What the horse, what the driver? Jag testar att säga välkommen faktiskt till den här veckans podcast. Jag brukar inte börja den ända, men det är så jäkla kul att ni är med oss och lyssnar, ni alla där ute. Den här podcasten den här veckan, lite speciell, lite längre intervju än vanligt, men det känns som att det är värt att lyssna på gästen som vi har den här veckan, David.
Ja, när man ska ringa upp Jerry Riordan, då får man göra space i programmet. Konsten är att inte ställa öppna frågor, för då får man långa svar. Visserligen i många fall väldigt innehållsfulla svar.
Ja, så var det. Men vi misslyckades med att inte ställa öppna frågor.
Ja, men framförallt tycker vi många bra svar. Och Jerry säger vad han tycker, så att det innebär att... Nej, men det är ju intressanta saker som sägs, helt klart.
Och otroligt intressant, och därför låter vi intervjun ligga i sin helhet i den här podcasten. Kul att ni är med. Hur mår du förresten, David, den här veckan?
Jag mår jättebra. Jag har ingenting att klaga på.
Har du återhämtat dig efter förra lördagen?
Nu förstår jag inte vad du menar.
Helt ärligt nu.
Ja.
Har du varit kallare på V75 någon gång?
Nej, men så här, det är väl klart, vi ska dissekera från början. Jag gick ju mycket på Rackham. Man var ju borta efter kör i V7-8. Ja. Det är jävligt tråkigt. Där det var jackpot och man tyckte omgången var ganska bra och sådär. Eller helt okej omgång. Nu är det tråkigt när de hoppar. Vi hade Kristoffer på den när han lät förhoppningsfull. Jag hade tittat på hästen, tyckte han kände stabil i voltstart. Men nu funkar det inte den här gången. Och då blir det fel ibland. Och där gick jag bort mig.
Sen dundrade vi vidare med Devs Daffodil, som vi hade en lång diskussion om i Twitchen, som vi kör på lördagar klockan 13:00, där vi har så många med oss nu, det är skitkul. Där hade vi en liten diskussion om Devs Daffodil.
Ja, vi hade en diskussion om huruvida det var skor och inte skor senast, så att insatsen på Eskilstuna skulle... Jag ville bara sätta det i ett sammanhang. Hon gick ju under 10 sista varvet, men jag tyckte att det var en formlös Melbourne Free som hon höll på att knappa in på. Hon var jättetidig för mig. En utav, jag tror hon hade 2 eller 3 Expressen och men sådär, det var inga konstigheter.
Nej.
Det var ju bara att det framställdes som att jag dissade när du sa då att hon var skitbra senast. Så att där fick jag också stå lite med skamvrån, även om jag tycker det. Sen även med...
Vi kan väl lämna den där veckan med den där Ailey Miss Sisu-veckan.
Ja, den rankar ner också. Den tyckte jag var överspelad. Nu blev det fel när den kom till spets väldigt enkelt och höll ändå på att förlora mot Melby Jinks. Det blev i mitt tycke en ganska svag uppfödningslöpningshistoria med en 14-tid räckte och det var lite, så mycket galopper som det är, men lite väl utspritt fält och så vidare. Jag har svårt att säga att vad heter den?
Ailey Miss Sisu.
Ailey Miss Sisu är en kommande stjärna. Jättekul att hästen vann. Kul för Per Nordström. Det är stort att ha 1:an, 3:an, 5:an. Imponerande jobb. Jag liksom säger ingenting om det, men jag har svårt att ta till med hästen. En avkomma efter Bear Summit vinner uppfödningslöpningen. För mig är det mer en tidig träningsprodukt.
Där går du inte igång.
Nej, en tidig träningsprodukt än att det är en kommande stjärna. Men som sagt, jag hade fel och det är lika bra att ta alla fel man har på V75 samma vecka, så slipper man sprida ut dem så mycket.
Jag skojar lite grann. Vem har inte haft iskalla V75 lördagar?
Nej, men jag har inga problem att ta det. Skit ska skit ha.
Du, apropå V75, bara en kortis nu. Vad säger du om helgens tävlingar som kommer?
Jo, det är ju såklart otroligt kul. Det är ju toppfinaler, roliga lopp på fredagen. Det är ju en sån helg man hade bott på Solvalla normalt sett. Jag är otroligt ledsen att man inte får åka dit. Det är, varje gång det är de här finalerna så blir man lite ledsen. Och, men du vet, glid in på Solvalla, man ser de här... stalltipset 20 kronor. Lycka till idag. Skam den som ger sig.
Är han kvar?
Ja, Morgan och hans fru som säljer de här stalltipset utanför.
Helt underbart.
Bara gå in i lokalerna och känna doften av den här heltäckningsmattan. Jag bara saknade så otroligt mycket. Och nu när det var liksom det här fredagskonceptet som de skulle testa på Valla, som de har försökt göra tidigare också, med bra sport och sen då lördagen, då hade man känt att nej, vilken rolig travdag. Men nu blev det som det blev. Och vi vet de här reglerna. Det är bara att anpassa oss. Men man får ändå konstatera att det är trist.
Så är det. Du, ville du vända en kortis till Frankrike innan vi kastar oss in i Jerry Riordans liv?
Ja, det vill jag göra. Jag vill ändå säga att det första B-loppet Prix de Bretagne avgjordes i söndags. Och jag menar, du var inte helt uppdaterad på det här loppet när vi pratade inför. Och
Jag var inte så upphetsad inför det loppet heller.
Nej, det var inte jag. Upphetsad var jag inte, men det är kul att följa liksom. Men när vi klämmar för det att Bahia Quesnot eller Bahia Canot som man kanske säger på franska, var tvåa efter en topprestation. Och då vill jag förföra att det säger mycket om den franska eliten. Nu var inte FaceTime Bourbon med och så vidare, men ändå att hon med en tuff löpning slår många etablerade hästar, säger om hur tunn eliten är i Frankrike just nu. Och då säger du typ något i stil med tävlar hon fortfarande.
Ja, det var mer liksom att så intresserad var jag av det loppet.
Ja, och om man då säger att nästa utropstecken i loppen var Carat Williams som då är 8.
Jag tänkte säga det. Och det känns ju som att han är 18.
Ja, tävlar han också, sa du liksom. Så var det då Diable du var värd som vann, som också var bra. Det var några utropstecken, men det var mycket gamla hjältar som återuppstod mer än att de nya var väldigt bra. Feliciano.
Fin på något sätt ändå.
Ja, det finns någonting i det också, men det känns ju som att sista söndagen i januari är vikt och skuret åt FaceTime Bourbon. Jag känns som att vi har en sån där sällan skådad storfavorit i ett sånt här storlopp. Faktiskt.
Så att, härligt! Bra David! Jag tycker att vi ger oss i kast med veckans gäst. Innan vi ringer upp Jerry här och innan våra lyssnare får ta del av hans, jag måste säga det ändå, mycket spännande historia. Vi pratar om mycket intressanta saker. Vad säger du kort om Jerry?
Jerry är en tränare som lite också går sin egna väg, eller ganska mycket skulle jag säga. Det kan man väl säga lite floskelaktigt om andra tränare, men jag tycker Jerry hästar är med i många storlopp. Många av de etablerade största tränarna, de siktar ju ofta på ett stort lopp där de vill att hästet vara mest. Men Jerry kör liksom, ja men typ Aetos Kronos. Han var med i båda E3-finalerna, vann båda. Var med liksom i flera storlopp. Nu är jag var med i Kungapokalen. Sen var det väl sen var det derbyt och så nu Europa-derbyt. Så nu det här. Det är liksom ingen tydlig topp, utan de får starta på under året. Och det är lite annorlunda mot vad andra gör.
Varsågoda. Här är veckans gäst, Jerry Reardon. And then we say hello to Jerry Reardon. Hello, Jerry.
Hello. Hello, Patrick. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, welcome to Travpodden. It's a pleasure for us to have you here. How are you and what are you doing?
Right now, thanks to you guys, I had an excuse to get out of doing some work. So I'm actually right on my couch right now. And I'm smelling this and from the kitchen, the smells of Thanksgiving. You know, today's Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in America. So it's a great holiday. I always love Thanksgiving, you know, because it's not connected to any sort of, war victories or religion or anything. It's just a nice day that everybody gets together and has a nice meal and just that happy to be together.
How do you celebrate nice that here in Sweden? Do you eat turkey?
Oh, yeah. Everything that we need, we have here. In fact, you guys have some really gigantic turkeys here. You'd give the Americans a good run for their money for gigantic turkeys.
Okay. But do you watch like NFL later in the day or some things like that? Or is it just NFL too?
Absolutely. Yeah. The NFL is going on with, empty stadiums or almost empty stadiums, but they're still trying to make it work. They've had their share of corona cases, but apparently they're doing a pretty good job of controlling all the contact.
At which age did you take out the license to train your own horses?
Well, in America, it's a lot more of a simple process than it is probably in other places. In America, all you have to do is you pass a test, which you'd have to really have a learning disability not to be able to pass because it's so simple. And then you need 6 A trainers to sign for you and say that they have seen you train and they know that you, you have ability. So I got the 6 guys to sign for me. I took the test and I was 20 years old when I did that.
Okay.
And you get it's a provisional license though. You're not allowed to just go out and train, 100 horses. You sort of for a year, minimum of a year, you're only allowed to train a few horses and show that, you're competent. And you also have to train. You can't just have a license and then after a year you get the full license. But that's it.
Okay. How many years did you spend in the United States before moving to Italy?
Well, I moved to Italy part-time in 1992.
Why?
Part-time. Yeah, because I had been working in, well, I really had six great years when I was working with Chuck Sylvester, the trainer of Mack Lobel.
And Pine Chip.
Pine Chip, Muscles, Yankee, tons of good horses. A lot of good pacers, too, that the Swedish people don't know about. But he's just a great, great guy, great trainer. And while I was working for him, we had Lou Gaida as an owner. Lou was the owner of so many great horses. Lisa
Mack Lobel, no?
Yes, yes.
Mack Lobel, yeah. Pine Chip. Yeah, a lot of great horses. And I got friendly with Lou in those 6 years while I was working with Chuck. And one day, Lou said to me, you know, I've got horses. He always had a lot of groups that he managed. And he probably had pieces of 150 horses that he was involved with. And he said, I've got my horses with seven different top trainers. And he said, I just need a plain old trainer where I can stick horses that stays in one place in New Jersey. So after 6 years with Chuck, I took that job. He told me, he described it as being the garbage man. I need a guy that will just take any horse I send to him. And when I take it away, I won't have to hurt anybody's feelings. And he said, you want the job? I said, yeah, absolutely. I was a young guy. And I knew when you're around people like Lou, there's always opportunity. And because he just was one of those guys that made things happen. And he knew quality. And, you know, he was a self-made guy. He was a guy that left school when he was, believe it or not, 14 years old, son of immigrants, you know. Right. And that guy, he could dictate a letter perfectly. I would hear him do it all the time. We'd be in a car and he'd be calling the secretary. He could dictate a letter perfectly, perfect punctuation, perfect grammar. A guy that, you know, left school when he was 14 years old. He was that type of person. So first year I was working for him with the garbage horses, I had a horse called Embassy Lobel. And he ended up being the richest trotter in the world that year. He was a 3-year-old. And we sold him to France. And the year after, we had a horse called Crown's Invitation. And Crown's Invitation, in the middle of the season, was 50% of the horse was bought by the Tognati family from Italy. Mm. They're the owners of the Jet Farm. Whenever you see horses coming from Italy with Jet at the end of their name, that's the Tognati family. So they bought 50% of the horse. We raced the horse in America. We had a great year. And when he turned 4, the horse went to Italy. But the deal was that Lou Gaida still owned 50% of him. And Lou told me I had to go to Italy once a month for a week to supervise the training. So I was like, that's a tough job to take.
And you accepted that?
Oh, yeah. That was really difficult to say yes to. And I was working privately for Lou Gaida, so I kind of had to anyway. But I thought, this will be fun. And it worked out really well because I had had a guy that had worked for me in America. He was from Denmark. And he had gone home after his 1 year was over with. His name was Eric Bondo.
Oh.
And, you know, Bondo's, everybody knows Bondo. He won the Prix de Marique. I called him up and I said, hey, Bondo, do you want to go down to Italy and take care of Crown's Invitation? And Bondo said yes, too. And Bondo's still in Italy. He never left. So it worked out great. We had a great couple of years with Crown's Invitation. And by the end of the year, those 2 years with Crown's Invitation, he raced in the Elite Lop, just deviating a little bit. But the year he won his elimination. And
Solar Effa.
No, this is long before Solar Effa. He won his elimination. And this was when Seacove won.
In 93.
That year. Yeah. And we were right on the back of, I'm trying to remember. It was Ole Goop's horse, whoever he had that year. We were right on his back, second over, coming off the last turn. And people touched Ole's wheel and made a break. So this was, he had won his elimination. We were 210 meters or so from the finish line, getting a perfect trip. And a little thing like that, and he was out of the race. But who knows if he would have beat Seiko. Seiko always looked like he was going to lose, and then he still won.
Yeah. But
anyway, that's what happened. I started going to Italy part-time, and by the time Crown's Invitation's career was over with, we ended up with a bunch of horses there. And I had to make a decision. I was training a stable in America and a stable in Italy. The situation in America, this was before the slot machine money revived racing in America. Tracks were closing. Italy was booming. Europe was just so much fun. The trotting sport, I just liked it so much more here than the way they were racing in America. And we also had our son was had just come into the picture. We had this little baby that was crawling around that we were thinking about. It'd be kind of cool for him to grow up with a bicultural experience living in Europe for a while. And now it turns out that he's bicultural, but he's mostly Italian. He's 26 years old now, but he's an Italian. But yeah. Anyway, that was a little bit family decision. A lot of it had to do with the business not doing well in America. But more than anything, I was just really enjoying the way racing was here in Europe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a question. How come you left Italy and decided to establish in Sweden? And which years was this?
Well, it's 2013. That was same thing, a little bit like what was going on in America, except those years before. I don't want to make it sound like I bring bad luck wherever I go, but same thing in Italy. The tracks were closing.
Yeah.
I
remember those years a lot where they didn't pay out the prize money and the gambling was going down heavily.
Yep. They weren't paying out the prize money. I owned a lot of horses myself, and suddenly you're not, just no money's coming in. And, you know, I had to do something, and I had raced frequently here in Sweden. So it wasn't like it was a whole new, something completely new to me. And I had a lot of friends from here. In fact, the whole situation that occurred with Halmstad, why I ended up coming to Halmstad, was because just friends of mine called me up and they said there was a barn available there and they recommended that I go to Halmstad. And yeah, it was a desperation move. I mean, you got bills to pay and no money coming in, you got to do something. So I moved 14 horses to Halmstad, and then I went for about 6 months like that, and then I brought the rest up and left other ones home and just went from there. Thank God for Sweden, I can tell you that, because it was pretty desperate in Italy at that time.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think you will stay there, or what do you say about the future?
Yeah, I've ruined everywhere I've been before, so I can't know where I can go back again. You guys, no, I don't want to say I had anything to do with it. I can tell you the thing I see in common though was when you have, when you don't have a strong leadership. Like what happened in America. In America, you have all the racetracks. They compete against each other. It's not a federation. It's crazy. Racetracks compete against each other, even within the states. And forget about two different states. You have a situation like the Meadowlands and Yonkers. They're 35 kilometers apart, and they race against each other. The same day. They compete for the gambler's dollars. There's no strategic way of they don't have any strategy at all in America for trying to get the people to bet as much as they can and also give them something worth betting on. I mean, it's not at all like Sweden, where we have, you know, everything is synchronized, the times when the racetracks race, everything is set up with an idea of trying to have the bet be as maximum as possible. And then in Italy, what happened there was they just went all out have the slot machines get priority. I mean, they have slot machines. They even bet more money on bingo now than they do on the horse races. And it was a complete case of where the government just abandoned. I don't know why. There's a lot of theories, but they just abandoned horse racing. And they had, they're way behind here when it comes to using, computers or the phones for betting. They just didn't have things set up like that in Italy. People were always going to their little betting shops, and the betting shops, they were one of the places where they installed slot machines, and betting on the races became a low priority because the operators of the parlors down there were making more money, more of a cut from the slot machines than they were from taking betting on the horse racing. And that's another crazy thing. There was, I think, the total amount of tax takeout on horse racing was, I don't know, something like 37% they took out. And it was on the slot machines, It's 18%. You know, so for the gambler, the money that he spent gambling, you know, in a slot machine, which is, you know, that's a brainless kind of a thing, but people seem to like it.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was more of their money was returned to them than when you bet on the horse races. And crazy, because all the secondary effects of horse racing on the economy, the positive secondary effects, you know, the jobs, all the different type of, you know, things you spend money on supporting the racing business doesn't exist with slot machines. Yet the government gave a better cut to, you know, as far as the gambling dollar went, gambling euro went to the slot machines than they did to the horse racing business. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
But I also think the horse betting business in the States is very undeveloped. But because it's a huge lack of information. You don't find, like, for example, if you bet on V5 in the States, you don't see the percents. It's very difficult to find this kind of information. And the pools are very small. You have one pool at Meadowlands, then you have one pool in Vegas, then you have one pool at Yonkers. Instead of collecting the pools and making huge pools like we have in Sweden, that's the biggest problem for the States, I think. Very difficult to bet on horses with the information and to win big.
Oh, absolutely. You're 100%. What, you know, because an example of that was Scioto Downs, which is a racetrack you probably have never heard of. It's in Ohio. But when the corona restrictions were beginning to lift, Scioto was the first track that had racing. Now, they never had $1 million bet, maybe two or three times in the history of their racetrack. Well, they were the only racetrack that was open. And they were betting, I think they bet over $2 million with, you know, average races, but they were the only racetrack that was open. And, you know, it just goes to show people will bet on the horse. And the nice thing, too, is they actually sustained it. They kept their betting way up. But they understood, like what you said, more information, that was necessary.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem, though, is the way the race, the betting money is diluted. Split to so many different, I mean, like I said, they compete against each other. You might have in a day, I don't know, for example, say 400 million crowns being bet in America, but it's bet on 9 different racetracks.
Yeah.
So it kills the opportunity to have a jackpot winning on the betting. It just kills it.
It's interesting. If we come back to Sweden, Jerry, what do you say about your first years here in Sweden?
You know, I was the first race we raced. We won. It was on a rainy, wet night in October. Just a small race in Halmstad. Thomas Erberg was driving. So, you know, I thought, well, that's a good sign. And, you know, the horses, they've always performed well. And we won an E3 pretty early, but yeah, I was a little bit, I don't know what the right word, I was a little bit concerned that I wasn't getting any Swedish owners. Then it got where I got a little bit, I was kind of a little bit sensitive about it too. Nobody was giving me horses. It was just my people from, my friends from Italy, the same the owners I'd had there. I actually ended up having, some French guy, every country in the world, Americans. I could not get a Swedish owner. And I just thought, it took forever before I started to get them. And I had no idea why. You know, I'd always been successful. And I didn't think the language that was a problem because I had Swedes that worked for me. And the Swedish people speak English so well. But I have no idea. I just... I don't know if it was a cultural thing that, I was really kind of hurt my feelings that I couldn't get any Swedish owners in my first years here. And then this doping thing started where I had, this extra scrutiny performed on my stable, which, you know, that's part of the game. I can take it. But, you know, when the ex-boss of the ST, Johan Lindberg, he thought it was necessary to put on the homepage of the ST website, Reardon horses are negative.
And, yeah, you know, yeah, Jerry, what? you talk about the Jet horses. I remember that thing. I think the horse was Tiamo Jet, was it?
Tiamo, yeah. Just coincidentally, they took down the posting about my horses being negative when I had a horse positive, Tenamo Jet. I mean, that was the only way I could get them to take it down. And, you know, that whole positive, I don't know if you remember the details, but it was basically, it was as phony as the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you know?
Yeah, exactly, I mean, exactly.
Well, I can tell you exactly, just, I don't want to go into all the details, but when they called me and said I had a horse positive for the substance was carbasia, you know, I was relieved when I heard carbasia because I thought, well, you know, he was obviously treated. In Italy, it's a very common, it's for the type of sickness you get when a tick bites the horse. You know, it's like Borrelia.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's for treating that type of thing. So I heard carbasia. I thought, well, he must have been treated when he was in Italy. So I asked the lawyer for the ST, Mr. Wallman. I said, well, I'll call the trainer that had him. I'm sure he treated the horse. But anyway, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, carbasia, still, I've never heard of a positive test for carbasia. I wonder why. I didn't even think it was something that was considered a... So anyway, I asked Mr. Wallman, I'm sure he was treated in Italy. I said, what's the rules on how long you have to wait? He said, 96 hours. You know, 96 hours, that's, you know, 96 hours is, you can't, you know...
It's 4 days.
You can't massage a horse within 96 hours. You know, it's just one of those type of things. Mm-hmm. So I said, 96 hours. I said, so, well, then this must be like a level, how much carbasia is in him. I said, how much carbasia is too much? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well, how much is in him? And he said, I don't know. And I said, what type of positive is this? And he said, there's a lot we have to learn about carbasia. So anyway, at that point, I just started making phone calls. And, you know, it turns out carbasia is not listed as a performance enhancing substance. It's the same thing as a vaccine or a worming medicine. You know, it's in that category, not performance enhancing, and found out that it stays in their system for 7 months. So by the time I had all my stuff together and had my lawyer and everything, you know, organized, well, the French Association had called up and asked, what's the deal on carbasia? Because you've invited two horses that get treated with carbasia. So anyway, it's for the elite law. And so after about a week, you know, and again, I say the ST, this is not, I don't want to blame the ST. You have individuals that compose the ST. The ST is a fantastic organization, but unfortunately, you know, individuals will do things. So anyway, they just basically withdrew everything. But meanwhile, my horse, Tenamo Jet, he's not allowed to race because they had taken another substance, whatever they call the test, urine, blood, you know, samples to do the analysis of. And until they got the results back, he couldn't race. So I called up Mr. Wallman again, and I asked him, what's the deal? How come I can't race my horse? He just came out with a statement that said, as long as the horses have it declared in the logbook, just like every other medicine, that they've been treated, it's okay to race. Why can't I race? And he said, we're just waiting for the results. I said, but it doesn't matter. He's still going to have the carbasia in him. It stays in them for 7 months. So anyway, he said, just please wait. And then I asked him, and who's the, can I say asshole?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I said, who's the asshole who, when they wrote the facts about carbasia, they wrote the facts about carbasia, but then the last sentence was, and it's also rumored to be a performance enhancer. You know, that was just thrown in there because when you read the facts about carbasia, there's nothing in it that is alarming, you know?
Yeah, so, but continue, sorry.
Yeah, so that last sentence, that was something that somebody ad-libbed, you know? And so I asked Mr. Wallman about that, and he said, Jerry, we just put that in there to warn other trainers not to use anything they don't know about. So I don't know what that meant. So anyway, about 2 weeks go by, and I get a phone call one day. It's from Wallman, the lawyer Wallman. And he says, Jerry, great news. You can train again without having anything to worry about. And I said, why is that, Wallman? We got the results back. He's positive again. I'm the only trainer in Europe that ever had to be negative. I had to be positive twice.
But how did this affect you as a trainer when people started to talk and you get those positive results about Carbasia?
Yeah, of course. You know, people unfortunately have a tendency to immediately jump to the conclusion that's it, without having any idea, you know, what Carbasia was. And I don't know, they didn't take the time. A lot of people actually did right away say something, because people that had been outside of Sweden and had trained, the whole thing that I've just found, when it was all over with, what I found really disturbing was they took the trouble to, and the expense to test the horse for something specifically that they thought there was a pretty good chance of being present in the horse. But it was pointless because it wasn't a doping substance. So I don't know if somebody said to them, you should test his horses for Carbasia. Like I always said, they get phone calls all the time from some guys that couldn't train a pig to get dirty. Mm. And they listened to them. They went through all that trouble to test for a substance that wasn't doping. And why did they do that? Why didn't they go that extra step and just, why didn't they just open up the computer and read about what it was? I don't know. Did they, or maybe they did. Maybe they did it anyway, and they still went ahead and did it. I'm just glad that Johan Lindberg found a new job, and he's not in charge of the SD anymore.
Yeah, but why? Because of this Carbasia thing, or because of the thing he wrote on the first page of ST?
Because, well, first of all, I think he can say all he wants that he had nothing to do with the whole doping thing, but he wrote that. He wrote that on the web page, and I know that for a fact. So I have to believe he was behind it. And you know, I just think that listen, the guy was a lousy guy, lousy CEO of the ST. He ended up getting fired, and you know, the whole propulsion mess was under his watch. So I would think that you know, that would certainly make me suspicious, just from my personal experience with the guy. Then I would. If anybody somehow made a mistake, I mean, they can keep finger pointing all they want there, but I would blame that guy the first that's from my personal experience with him.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We don't have him, so he can't explain his view of the case, but this was your view, at least from it.
Well, it was, obviously that's a huge mess, and the whole, you know, it was under his watch. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about, something more fun. We're going to talk about your horses this weekend, but of course, first of all, Jerry, we have to talk shortly about Lisa America, one of my favorite horses of all time. Tell us about your feelings for Lisa, Jerry.
Yeah, well, she was, you know, obviously she was named after my wife. Lou Guida named her after my wife. You know, I had trained her mother, I trained her grandmother, so, you know, the family's very close to me, and she, even if everything was going smooth in Italy, she still would have been so special, because she just, you know, I never had any horse that had such a combination of, she had speed, she had guts, she had class. And just the way she conducted herself, she looked different than the other horses. And, you know, as she got older, and she started having the aches and pains that, like, all racehorses get as they get older, she was just indifferent. I mean, she had that something about her that when she was, that summer when she was here in Sweden, when she was winning those races, I don't know, you know, the way she would just dominate, a little bit like her dad would do. You know, I think Torvald Palema, he just looked over at her and he didn't want to even mess with her. He was like, I've seen enough of that lady. And it was just, but more than anything, too, it was at a moment when things were horrible in Italy, and there was no money coming in, and we needed a horse that was going to save the day, and she did that for us, too.
But it's very unusual. You started her in the Elite Lop as a 4-year filly. That's very, very unusual.
Yeah, Klaus Koch called us up. She just set the world record in the Europa, and Klaus, that was Lou Guida. You know, he was very good friends with Klaus. there was a lot of, they had a lot of history together going back to Triple T Storm when he raced in the, when the Elite Lop.
Yeah.
You know, Lou was a businessman and, he had fought, Triple T Storm for $100,000 at the Meadowlands. And he had a deal to sell half the horse almost immediately for, I think half the horse, he was selling the horse for $250,000. And there's some Italian guys, because he told them he's going to race in the Elite Lop. And they said, if he races in the Elite Lop, then we'll buy half the horse for $250,000. So Lou calls Klaus up and says, hey, Lou, invite my horse to the Elite Lop. Then he kind of had a point, because there really wasn't another good American horse that year. And Klaus said, I'm not so sure if I'm going to invite him. I mean, he's really not that good of a horse. And Lou said, well, what if I get John Campbell to come over and drive him? And Klaus said, if you can get John Campbell to come, then I will invite the horse to the Elite Lop. So Lou called up John Campbell and said, you have to come to the Elite Lop. And John said, well, I've got this on that weekend, and Saturday I've got this horse to race in Canada, and Sunday I'm going to, it's really hard to do. And Lou said, I'll give you $50,000. Mm-hmm. And I asked Lou later, where did you come up with $50,000? And Lou said, I don't know. It's the first fucking number popped into my head.
A good story.
Yeah. So John Campbell came, and I think even John, when John tells the story too, he goes, I even pushed him into getting me on the Concours. So it was a pretty expensive a weekend for Lou.
Yeah.
And, but he ended up getting the horse sold, half the horse sold. So, and he and Klaus were on the phone all the time, and Klaus was very upset. He said, how can you pay a driver that much money? That's more than I make in a year.
Yeah, so, it is.
Yeah,
Now Jerry have won the Elite Lop for a few years ago with Ringo Starr Treb. Can you tell us about that day?
Oh, I don't know. I don't want to use the word surreal, because it's so vivid, the memories of it. So I think when something is surreal, it should be foggy, but I can remember it sharp as if it happened yesterday. The two biggest things as far as the race went, when I was watching the first heat and all that confusion happened with the recall and Bold Eagle and the delays, and then suddenly Bold Eagle just left the track.
Yeah.
And when I saw Bold Eagle leave the track, I thought to myself, you know, this changes the whole dynamic of the race. This is like a match race now with propulsion. And we got the number advantage. And I think I got the horse that, if it's a match, I think we can beat propulsion. And, you know, it just got down to that. Maybe I was oversimplifying things, but pretty much that's what it turned out to be. So anyway, when the elimination was raced and, you know, he got to the front and he rated it well, and Orion was kind of being Orion and just kind of taking his time, and he was
You were a little unlucky, because Pastor Bob was so fast in the finals, so you had to drive outside him. I don't think that you expected that.
Yeah, but that kind of changed things a little bit too. That wasn't so bad, because I'll explain that. But you know, when we got the number one again in the final, and Johan put a pair of cups on Pastore Bob. He got very hot. And actually that turned out to be an advantage, because you know, the pace was so honest, it was so fast, so honest, that you know, we did have to come over first over, but Vim never had to ask Ringo to go like extra fast, because when he moved over on the outside of Pastore Bob, he knew Pastore Bob wasn't going to make it the whole way. He just sat.
Yeah.
And all he had to do was keep an eye on where propulsion was. And we got help there a little bit too, because Lionel kind of got in the way, you know, stablemate, but he kind of got in the way of propulsion. Mm. So we always had a separation. We always had two or three horses separation. So when we hit the head of the stretch, and even though Ringo had gone first over, he never had to ask him. He never raced against Pastore Bob. Pastore Bob quit. And, you know, Ringo hits the head of the stretch. That finish line was close enough that it was a sprint. And, you know, it's you give Ringo Starr-Trebb 2 lengths advantage, he's tough to catch in a 200-meter race.
Yeah. So, it was a nice day and probably your biggest win in your career, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, we won race, you know, the international was for more money, but that was nothing in the sense of what it means. Yeah. You know, this race is, you know, this race and the Prix de Mérique, they're the two biggest races there are. They're the two where you're going to find the most competition. You're going to find, you know, the races where the public follows the races too. It's just in every sense, the level of competition and the level of public appeal. They're so far ahead of every other race.
Yeah. You have three very interesting starting horses in the weekend. We're going to pay more attention to the one in V75. But on Friday, you have Aetos Kronos in a big race, the Solvalla Grand Prix. He got a bad not so bad number, but he got a number 9. How come Magnus Hughes is driving the horse nowadays? Because it was Orion, then you won, then a little short while Rickard Skoglund, but no Magnus.
Well, Rickard never drove Aetos.
No, but he lost Sian Fast a lot before.
Fast, yeah. Aetos was driven in the beginning. I had Johan.
Yeah.
You know, but Johan, he trains 150 horses. Well, I don't know if 150, but he's got a lot of horses.
Yeah.
So it's like sooner or later, I was going to lose Johan as a driver. And that's what happened because he had Gus Miraz. And then I had Orion.
Yeah.
And Orion won an E3 with him.
Yeah.
Then he qualifies him for the next E3. And then he says to me, Jerry, I can't drive him in the final. And I said, why is that? He said, I'm going to go to America and drive in the Hamiltonian for Marcus Melander. And I said, oh, and I'm thinking, well, Marcus had 3 really good horses for the Hamiltonian. You know, he had Green Shoe.
Yeah.
And
Green Alicia and Chimpanzee.
Yeah, exactly. I'm thinking he's going to drive one of them. And I say, well, that's good for him. Lost it for a second. I said, that's good for Orion, right? Driving one of those 3. So I said, which one are you going to drive? Jerry. And I said, yes, Orion. Jerry. I said, which one are you going to drive, Orion? Jerry. And I said, well, what are you talking, Orion? Help me out here, please. The horse. He went to the Hamiltonian to drive with the horse called Jerry.
Yeah.
You know, Orion being Orion, he can't just say that to me immediately. Jerry, he says. So Johan was free to drive in the final. So he drives. And then we go back to Orion because Johan had his horse. And then we start the year with Orion. But then Orion tells me after the elimination that he has to drive Don Fanucci Zet. So Johan was free for the final, which he won. Yeah. This is the Kungspokalen. And then now we go along and Johan can drive until Gus Miraz is in the race. So at that point, I had used Magnus a little bit. And I thought, you know, if nothing else, he's only 20 years old. So at least he'll be around for a while.
Yeah, okay. But he's number 1 at the horse now.
Yeah, in Sweden. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I like Magnus. I think he does a really good job. And, you know, I mean,
yeah, it's, really.
It's not like, you know, he's if you look at the list of drivers, I think he's 6th right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the top guys, a lot of them are tied up with horses. And you look who's there. Again, the only thing, if he was, you know, 30 years old, he'd probably be driving a lot more horses because he's very good. I think the only thing that stops him from getting more drives is that he's 20 and there's a little bit of a, you know, a prejudice against 20-year-olds driving in million-dollar races. But he's a good driver. He takes really good care of the horses. I like that. The horses stay fresh when he drives them. And he's just a nice kid, nice family. All of those guys are nice.
Yeah.
Just to excuse Orion a little bit, when he chose to drive Jerry in the Hamiltonian, I think he hoped that Jerry would qualify and that Brian Sears, who was the original driver at Green Shoe and Chimpanzee, should qualify both, which he did. And then Orion should think, I think that he hoped that he could drive the other one that Brian didn't choose. But then they choose David Miller for Chimpanzee, who finished 3rd. That was a little bit unlucky for Orion. That's the, yeah. I think that's the thing with Jerry's story. But okay, so what do you expect from Eidos Kronos in that race? Is he in top shape?
Yeah, he's in good shape. You know, I was going to race him in Modena at the race, the European Union, it's called. It was the race where FaceTime Bourbon was beaten last year.
Yeah.
I was going to take him to that race. I had Enrico Belay. He was going to drive the horse for me. You know, he's always been the top driver in Italy. And, you know, the numbers come out before you actually have to enter the final entry. So I saw he drew number one. And I was very concerned about that because there were 14 horses that were going to race. Gocciadoro had 6 horses in the race all around Eitos. Eitos doesn't leave. Number one is not a good number to leave with anyway at Modena. So I was talking to Belay about the whole situation. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. You know, so I had faith in Enrico. And then what happens, Enrico gets kicked out of the sulky and separates his shoulder. Right. Wow. Before we have to enter. Yeah. So he's been out. He hasn't been driving now for close to, ever since that race, a week before the race. And so I just thought, I'm not going to put another driver down. And I'll just stay home and not worry about getting locked in, going all the way to Modena to finish locked in fifth or something like that. So I kept him home. But the horse was ready to race in that race. So we just trained him up sharp another time. And, you know, it's a little long between races, but that's the reason he hasn't raced. And, but he was very good in his last works, and, the horse never goes a bad race. He's always coming at the end, and, he'll, you know, I think we'll see what type of shape Akuri D is in. I think that's the big question right now.
Yeah.
And,
but what do you think that when you say that, do you have any expectations that he's probably not as good as he was during the summer?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this seems like there's been a little, that form where he looked invincible, the race in France, I don't know if what happened that day and if they've corrected it. And he came back and raced and won in Bierki, but he didn't, he's as beautiful as ever, but he didn't look quite as overwhelming in that race as we've seen him. Now, you know, Frody was driving him and it was an easy race to win. So that might have been just, and they probably have been working on him to get him over whatever the problem was. So maybe he'll be back to 100% right now, but you know, when he was winning, he looked like a horse that the only way you could beat him is if, you know, he beat himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Better than everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. On Saturday, Jerry, you have Tess Idetea. Tell us about her.
You know, she's a tough old mare, eight years old now. She was in France with Fabrice Soulois for the last 2 years. And, you know, the situation, I know you guys know how it is in France. Mares don't get to race other mares after they've made their, you know, around 3 million, 3.5 million. You have to race against colts. And she's made close to 7 million now. And I think when she came to me, I was looking at her last races, and she wasn't getting any money, but she was racing tough against Davidson DuPont and Belina Jocelyn, you know, Peter Marie courses. So, you know, she's not the horse she was when she was 6 years old, but she's still a tough mare, and she's made almost a million this year. And she loves her type of trip where she just sits covered up and, you know, on his pace, tips off a cover. She's explosive. She'll go 200 or 300 meters really fast. And, you know, she always gets money. As long as she has racing room, she always gets us money.
But are you surprised if she wins?
Well, I think she's in the second group. You know, there's two or three horses here that are just, you know, faster than her. But it wouldn't surprise me, again, if she got the trip. And maybe a race where there's a lot of good horses in it, where you always think when there's a lot of good horses that you're going to get a good pace. But that doesn't happen that way always, you know. But again, she has number five, which means it seems like when I have horses with number five, they either get the dead position or they get a really great position, one or the other. So hopefully she gets the good position. And looking at the field, it's pretty well balanced. In fact, I thought, you know, a couple of the horses that I thought when they won, they looked so fantastic, like Wild Love, for example, or Head and Boko. When they won their last races, I thought, man, we're never going to be able to beat them. But then they came back and they were not quite as convincing as they had been in those races. So I do think that a lot of these mares, it seems like when they have their day, they look fantastic, but they're not having that day consistently. So yeah, she could get lucky. Her form is very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have Saren Fass. Where is he in the ranking among all the horses you have had, Jerry?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't even thought of it that way. I think that he's a horse that he's another horse that likes a certain type of trip. It's amazing how horses, they develop this as time goes on. He's a horse that can take, he can sit in the dead position for a kilometer. And but on the other hand, if he has to sit 1,100 meters, it's like he counts it, how far he has to go. He's been a couple times, when he had to go out too early, he disappointed us a little bit. But he's an extremely fast horse. He can leave pretty good, actually, but he never seems like he has a number where he can really take advantage of it. The other day in the Eskilstuna's last race, with number one, he left pretty darn good. He gave Global Welcome a pretty good run to the first turn. The horse can leave, but number one, it was a trap,
Yeah.
We got behind Global Welcome, and he was covered up immediately and never raced. But he is getting better as he gets older. His race in Finland, three races back when he won the Finlandia Io, that's a perfect race. That distance, I think the shorter the race, better for him. Even though he's a big, strong horse, he likes the sprint races. And he likes when you don't send him off the gate. He just seems to like that a lot better. When you don't send him off the gate, you keep him out of the action early and then get him into it. Like that day, it didn't matter. He went the last kilometer uncovered, but he didn't get used at all the first 500 meters. And, that's the kind of race he likes. He likes to really get saved a lot.
Yeah.
And then you can use him double hard.
Yeah. Jerry, I think I have said it before in this podcast. I mean, he's going to be a really superstar. Really superstar. Tell me, am I wrong?
I think the progress that he's made, the owner, like most owners, would like to race him every week. And, he talks about France. And I told him, I said, really, if we want to have an elite lop horse, I think we should just forget about racing this winter.
Yeah.
Just do the classic preparation and, find a race, one of those 40,000 crown races for his first start back and go from there. I said, because he certainly has the ability to be an elite lop horse.
Yeah, absolutely.
Were you disappointed with Magnus, the way he drove in Jubileumspokalen?
Well, there were two things happened there. One was, in the first turn, Magnus was outside of Stole the Show's very fast leaving, much faster than Zaren. But he was kind of coasting along because out in the middle of the racetrack, Bjorn was driving the horse who I can't remember the name of.
Seismic Wave in that race.
Yeah, Seismic Wave, exactly. Seismic Wave. So Magnus is in the middle. And up front, Rickard looks back and Magnus said it felt like he was taken up a little bit, like he's going to let one of us go.
Yeah.
And he said, the way Bjorn was just kind of casually cruising along, he just had the feeling that it was going to be Bjorn that was going to be the one that was going to get to the front. And Saren Fass is going to be stuck out in the dead position. So he said, well, I'm going to get there before Bjorn does.
Yeah.
So he opened up Saren and, he was almost past Stole the Show when Stole the Show came back on again. Well, at that point, then now they hit the second turn and they were going really fast. And, he didn't give up until the kilometer. And next thing when you're driving those kind of horses, they can go fast so easy. It's really, it's not a hard thing to do to end up having a kilometer like that because they just can go so darn fast, those horses. And unfortunately it popped up. It cost Stole the Show the race. That was, we obviously got no money. But, poor Stole the Show, he should have won that race that night if it wasn't for that. But the whole thing was just that first turn. And, if you watch the replay, you can see it. There's a moment there when Magnus has to make a decision. Am I just going to sit here? Because Bjorn is not going to be in the dead position. Bjorn's going to get to the front. You know, if you thought Bjorn was going to be in the dead position, he would have stayed where he was and been second over.
Yeah.
But that's how it happened. And, you know, it's a split second decision. And, you know, those.
Yeah, but that happened in racing. I mean,
yeah.
As a gambler and as an observer, I prefer when they are competing in the races than either than they are like letting the favorite go to the front and then nothing happens. So, I mean,
yeah,
if you make a move, I mean, if Rickard will let the lead to him, he will be a genius. So it's very difficult. And I mean, it's better this way. But one more question about Søren Foss. He is from the mine, he's out from the race, so he has number four now. I mean, you have an expectation for him to be able to win, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, Very Kronos is in great shape right now. He's a, you know, he's a serious horse. That's a, he's a half brother to Treasure Kronos. That was a, you know, she was a fabulous horse.
Yeah, we had the Christopher last year in the pod, and he said
last week
he realized that when he drove a good horse, the first time he realized that he drove a good horse, it was Pleasure Kronos.
Yeah,
yeah, she was pretty amazing, and so the pedigree is really strong there, you know. And this horse, he's Ready Cash from that mother, so it's. Whatever that horse does, there's a, you know, the paper is there to support it. But he's, I think that, again, maybe we're going to be in a situation where if we can get the first part of the race where we don't have to get used too hard, and if we can always have a little bit of separation from Very Kronos, you know, where we can get the jump on him, then I think it's possible to beat him.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some fast leaving horses inside of Soren. I think it's a good chance to get a really good trip, which is this horse doesn't get too often.
No. Yes, time is ticking, Jerry.
Big time.
Thank you very much for letting us talk to you. It's a great pleasure for me and David.
Thanks for having me. I could go on for a couple of days.
Be good luck to the horses that are racing in the weekend, and see you soon in the tracks.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Jerry Reardon där. Ja, uttömmande väl?
Verkligen. Det var ju vår längsta intervju hittills. Men det var mycket nytt och intressant. Och hans vinkel. Sen tog han ju bladet för mun och kritiserade Johan Lindberg ganska hårt. Eller Johan Lindberg och Svensk Travsport då. Och jag ringde faktiskt upp Johan Lindberg och frågade om han ville komma till tals och säga någonting. Han sa att det behövde han inte, men han skrev ett sms så vi kunde läsa upp, och det kan du läsa upp nu.
Jag kan göra det. Från Johan Lindberg alltså, som citerar då. Jo, jag kommer ihåg när Tinamo Jet testade positivt för Carbesia i Midocarb och att det var en substans som var nyligen införd i reglementet. Vilka substanser som ska dopingklassas eller inte hade inte en generalsekreterare ansvar för, varför just den frågan är svår för mig att svara på. Jag vet att Carbesia är effektivt mot fästingburna sjukdomar, men det hamnade såklart på listan av någon annan anledning. Sen blev det ju så att Imidocarb godkändes för hästar som bevisligen varit i södra Europa, och Jerry friades helt riktigt. Det är dock intressant att Jerry tror att chefen på ST bestämmer precis allt. Det finns det med större makt än så i dessa frågor. Det kan han ju fundera på ett varv på innan han klagar mig personligen för någon häxjakt. Slutcitat.
Ja, och ja, det var väl skönt att han fick säga sin ståndpunkt, så kan vi lägga den grejen bakom oss. Alla har ju rätt att ha sina åsikter och så vidare, men så länge andra parten får komma till tal så är det, känns det fair.
Ja, nu ska vi ge oss i kast med V75, David, på lördag. Vi börjar med V75s första avdelning. Det är Stoeliten, vi har vidrört det redan, och vi har gjort det framförallt med Jerry Reardons Tessy DT. Det låter inte som att Jerry tror att de går ut och vinner det här loppet direkt.
Nej, den feelingen fick man. Hon kanske är, även om hon spurtar bra senast, det var en rejäl avslutning, så kanske hon måste ha det kört i halsen ännu mer för att räcka till. Och det här loppet är mycket bättre än det senast. Och det är väl fel distans för henne den här gången också.
Vad tror du om Melby Free då, som är favorit den här gången? Nu är det 2140 meter, till skillnad från senast, då var det halvvarvet längre.
Ja, det talar till hennes fördel. Och sen så är hon mindre, hälften så mycket spelare som senast. Det talar också till hennes fördel. Till hennes nackdel talar ju att hon inte visade någon form senast. Och Förra vintern var det lite grann samma sak. Hon ebbade ut ganska rejält efter sommarens prestationer. Och på hösten var hon sämre. Jag vet inte.
Jag gillar Hevin Boko. Det vet jag att du gör också. Jag läste förresten innan vi körde igång våran podd här, en liten tweet-tråd. Du hade lite synpunkter där på styrningen senast ifrån Mika Fors sida.
Mm, det där var väldigt intressant faktiskt. Jag var ju besviken. Jag hade gått mycket på Hevin Boko senast. Och det var ju det loppet där Melby Free satt i spets. Så jag tyckte att Mika Fors skulle kört framåt för att utnyttja Melby Frees svaghet. Att hon då skulle vara distanssvag. Mm. Nu satt Mika kvar och körde typ sista 600 och då galopperade hästen. Och jag skrev på Twitter typ att det var en tiltande styrning. Då menar jag då att liksom, det var passiv och så vidare. Mm. Och det som skriver man ju som spelare utan att ha all fakta. Man kan alltid bli motkontrad om att men hästen kändes dålig, kan han säga då. Men nu körde han ju ändå, fast det senare, så dålig kan det inte ha känts. Skitsamma. Så skrev Kaipe Jussila, som jag tror är kompis med Micka, skrev då att Micka minsann alltid är påläst och koll. Och jag har tidigare haft en invändning om att Micka Forst är säkert en hyvens kille. Han verkar köra reko i loppen, alltså inga problem så. Och det är kul med att han kör i Sverige, tycker jag liksom. Det blir lite bättre mix på de här större loppen. Men jag tycker att han väldigt ofta inte har 100% i koll på motståndet. Han är inte så påläst på sina motståndare. Han kan sin häst men inte motståndarnas svagheter och kan inte utnyttja det. Det blev en diskussion mellan mig och Kaipe Jussila som då ebbade ut i att han menar på att Micka tyckte att hästen kändes dålig i det loppet. Men läser man då Timo Nurmos intervju till det här loppet om Hevin Boko så säger ju Timo Nurmos ganska tydligt att han tror att galoppen kan ha berott på att han har någon grop i banan. Ja, han var inte helt säker på galoppen. Det var i alla fall inget fel på hästen. Han har tränat på för fullt efteråt. Tycker det känns lika fin och formstark i jobben som gjort hela hösten. Du läser jag utanför. Eller läser jag citat i travronden.
Just det.
Och ja, alltså jag menar bara det här får man ju brottas med som spelare lite grann. Det är möjligtvis att Micka tyckte det. Men han har nog inte pratat med Timo efter loppet kan man då undra. Det borde de rimligtvis ha gjort. Att han säger till Timo att hon kändes inte bra och så vidare. Så att man får väl gissa sådär. Han körde ju offensivt gången innan när hon kändes bra. Så att, ja, jag vet inte. Det var ju, jag ligger inte sömlös över här. Men det var ju lite ett exempel på hur det kan gå till.
Ja, och framförallt då hur du kanske ska behandla Hevin Boko till nu på lördag.
Mm. Hon har ju ett bra andra spår. Jag vet inte, jag tycker hon har en bra uppgift. Men jag har inte bestämt mig. Det här loppet är ju just nu. Man måste ta lite ställning. För det är jämspelat mellan 2, 3, 4, 5 och 6. Jag tycker att Dear Friend behöver spela till 15%.
Ja.
Hon behöver det på läppen och ja, ska hon få det varje gång? Det känns inte så sannolikt.
Mm, min första häst i loppet, David, är Wild Love som det ser ut just nu.
Du, innan du fortsätter, har du kan du statistik på Solvalla? Kevin, vi hade ju Kevin i podden. Jag kollade upp det efteråt.
Om jag kan Wild Love statistik på Solvalla?
Ja.
Jag vet du, jag har inga problem med spelare som tittar på hästar när de besöker Jägersro eller Solvalla. De har dålig statistik och bra statistik där och hej och hå. Fine, det kanske ger en liten fingervisning. Men för mig, när jag ska spela så bryr jag mig precis noll. Många, vad har hon för statistik på Solvalla?
Nej, men det som det handlar om. Det handlar om att Kevin sa ju på den för, var det 2 veckor sedan, att hästen har problem att resa. Och det är därför hon kanske har presterat sämre på Solvalla. Och hon har ju aldrig vunnit på Solvalla på, ja, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 starter. Mm. Då kan man då säga jaha, men det säger inte så mycket. Hon har stått i 9,81, 2,40, 2,07, 10,88, 5,40, 20 gånger.
Ja.
Men 2,56.
Bra att du lägger till. Det är bra att du lägger till det, David, också. För att om det handlar om resan, fine. Ja. Det är, ja. Och så är det ju. Vissa hästar är ju känsliga att resa längre och prestera sämre av den anledningen. Ja, men det kan jag ta till mig. Men man kan också läsa statistik ibland. Ja, men,
det håller jag helt med om.
Att det kan med grannbanor, ja, men där har den inte gått bra. Nej, men
håller med helt. Där är jag helt med dig. Man får ju sätta det i en kontext. Och jag tog upp det eftersom Kevin då specifikt sa att hon är bökig att resa med. Och han sa ju också, det är nog därför hon har presterat sig på Solvalla.
Ja.
Och apropå att hon skulle ha vinst sen och så vidare. Så att, ja.
Ja, men point taken.
Ja.
Vi har 75 andra avdelning. Jättefavorit Global Agreement från innan.
Ja, det måste ju vara grovt överspelat. Det är min känsla. Han har varit bra på slutet, men han känns ju som att han är bäst en bit ut i banan och det har varit lite så här rusartid och framförallt på Gävle och Puh sa ju att han var sämre senast. Jag kan inte gå på honom som 62%, nu kommer det gå ner, men här vill jag gardera. Wine Kind of Art med Björn Goop känns intressant.
Den gillar jag.
Ja, det vet jag att du gör. Den funkar alltid. Den är ju typ knappt torskat felfri och Prime Lini också med Örjan känns väl intressant. Ett par andra som är bra och som inte är så spelade. Amorcel Levallo till 4%.
Ja, men det finns ju ett gäng där bakom.
Ja, men Red Mile Brodde var ju jätteenkelt senast. Visst, Jägersro och spets, men det är barfota igen och den är bara 1% liksom, så att penseln åker fram.
Yes. V75s tredje avdelning då. Man är för söt, hörru, senast. När man har tjatat om Cargo Door hur länge som helst. Och vad mötte han då? Han var nerstruken, 7:an var väl struken i det där loppet. Jag tror 10:an var struken också. Det Cargo Door vann. Han hade alltså betydligt bättre läge än vad han hade på förhand. Och mötte han då? Nej, ingenting. Man är för härlig alltså när man har hållit på med den där och jagat och jagat och jagat. Va?
Ja, så är det ibland med trav.
Ja, man blir så trött alltså. Jag tror han kan vinna nu. 6%. Jag tror han kan vinna.
Fast det här är väl en brutalt bra bronsfinal.
Jag skulle säga det precis. Det är ju bra hästar emot. Men med, hoppas de skickar på goggles så tror jag att han leder länge ändå. Jag har jätterespekt för Farlandram, det vet du sedan tidigare.
Ja.
Men, ja, men och det är många andra bara Born i Jordnykorn och Van Gogh, ZS och allt vad de heter.
Alltså, de fyra är ju, det är ju ruskigt bra hästar. Som,
ja, det är bra hästar.
Ska det gå utanför dem så blir jag grymt förvånad. Sen kanske man inte behöver ta fyra för det är en osexig lösning. Men Global Winner är också bra. Liksom, så
Ja, men jag sträcker nog han på läget ändå, tror jag.
Ja. Ja.
Vad har du för första häst förresten?
Jag vet inte, jag har inte bestämt mig. Falando Am måste nog ändå veta så bra som han var senast. Det är slutvarvet, det är helt sjukt. Ja.
Fjärde avdelningen då. 4, Chicharita, favorit. Hade väl, ska jag helt villigt erkänna, inte någon superfeeling för henne som stor favorit på, eller som favorit på V75 på Eskilstuna senast. Men jag måste säga det. Hon gick i mål. Jag var imponerad. Jag tyckte att det var sjukt fin häst.
Men det är lite jobbiga hästar på tillägg nu i min känsla. Hon står ganska tufft in i loppet.
Annat motstånd nu?
Ja, helt annat motstånd då. Visst. Vi får se hur stor hon blir här. Men jag är lite sugen på gardera. Jag tycker det är rejäla hästar där bak. Och det är inte så många runda då. Men Activated får ju bara 5 hästar på mellanvolten. Och så någon galopp så kan det bli 3/4 ut. Så att jag kommer måla på här. Det är min känsla. Jag måla på. Men Activated kommer jag ta bland annat i varje fall. Kanske Dixie Brick också.
Ja, jag har också tidig feeling för Activated. Känns som att den där uppgiften måste vara bland den bättre hon har haft på länge väl.
Det är
känslan just nu i alla fall.
Håller med.
Ja, femte avdelningen då, David. En kortis som stor favorit i 8 Seismic Wave.
Nej, han är ju väldigt bra. Örjan håller honom extremt högt. Det har jag ju vetat länge. Och han blir svår att fälla. Det är bara att inse liksom. Men spår 8 kan bli lite häx. Hur bra var inte Sir Henry P. Hill senast?
Ja, men kul att du säger det med lite utrustningsändringar. Ja, för att det var liksom inte bara en bra prestation det där. Det var ju faktiskt så att Vagado Bonbi fick vara med där bakom och han lämnar ju liksom den efter att ha gjort jobbet. Så att jag håller med dig fullständigt.
Och sen menar Seismic Wave blir 6 gånger mer spelade än Vagado Bonbi som det är just nu. Det kanske ändras, men jag har inte bestämt mig, men jag gillar inte att spika de här stora spår 8 och så vidare. Men visst, när det är Örjan Nurmos så är det en säker kombo, så att lite ont i magen för jag.
Sen kommer vi till omgångens bästa singelsträck. Om ingenting händer fram till och med lördag, det är kort bit kvar. Jag tror inte jag kommer att ändra mig. Jag kommer att luta mina system på nummer 5, Saren Fass. Jag tror att han vinner. Och jag tror att han gör det faktiskt, David, ganska komfortabelt.
Okej. Okay. Ja, jag vet inte. Cyberlane har ju visat en enorm formtopp här länge. Och kan han vinna på ledningen, eller i ledningen över 2-6, så kan han göra det över 2-1 också. Jag tror att han tar sig förbi Milligans Gold. Det är inte säkert att han gör det, men jag tror att han gör det. Och då tycker jag att han ska ha en bra chans från spets. Sen så mellan Milligans Gold får nu äntligen ett bra spår. Ryggledaren på honom. 5% känns lite lågt där. Det är väldigt rolig guldfinal. Det ska bli kul att se här loppet.
Fan vad jag känner att jag stack ut hakan nu och ser komfortabelt. Det var ett jag tror att han har en bra segerchans då.
Ja, men det jag gillar när du sticker ut hakan. Det är bättre att göra det innan än att göra det efter.
Ja, exakt. Ja, men fan vad jag gillar den där hästen alltså. Såg du han såg ut sist?
Nej, absolut. Rubbet kvar och stenhåll. Det var så sjukt där när han körde så otroligt hårt. I jubileumspokalen. Och sen så gången efter kom han ut och vinner från Dödens i Finland. Då har man liksom, då har man ett hårt psyke.
Tror han mår bra av det där, apropå det, att sitta fast med alla krafter kvar som han gjorde senast. Fan, börjar redan tveka.
Från säger... att vinna komfortabelt till 15% att liksom börja backa.
Ja, det är stabilt. Det är stabilt. Ja. Men jag lyssnar på dig, David, med Cyberlane. Men nej. Jag ska nog gå på Saren Fass. Vi kör så länge. Sjunde avdelningen då. Vad gör vi här?
Jag vet inte. Jag tror att Royce Rolls blir lite överspelad. Jag tycker att han känns bäst på kort distans. Det är min absoluta uppfattning. Även var bra senast. Jag vet inte. Det här loppet är svårt. Jag har ingen riktigt tydlig idé så här när man smäller upp listan. Speedy Tilly kanske till 6% från spår 12. Men det är tufft att vinna finaler från spår 12. Alltså. Melby Guards på rätt kanske.
Bike på Västerbo Pokerface.
Ja, det kan bli vad som helst.
Det är väl inte någon Jorma favorit ändå?
Och sitta alltså jag vet inte, han känns...
Där, det är väl inte sådär så att man känner sig där... Wow.
Han känns mest stark. Alltså han är ju såklart bra också. Han är mest stark bakifrån bike och Jorma. Det känns vingel. Absolut, gör det.
Mm.
Jag vet inte, Dwayne sett om poletten har trillat ner eller om det senaste var en one-hit wonder-grej. Att han kanske, man vill se honom prestera ett par gånger i rad innan man kan gå på honom.
Små luriga avslutning känns det
ja,
som.
Ja, verkligen.
Här, vi rider ute på lördag i Twitchen klockan 13:00.
Ja, det kommer vi absolut göra. Det kommer vi göra.
Bra, nu rundar vi. Hiss och diss den här veckan, David. Vad tänker du?
Nej, men jag har både hissar och dissar.
Ja, du har det.
Mycket jag åsikter under travet. Du får välja.
Jag väljer.
Ja. Alltid välja.
Ja. Nej, det jag får inte alltid välja, men jag kan göra det den här veckan.
Ja.
Jag hissar. Nu tror jag inte att Robert Berg har lyssnat på vår podd. Vem vet? Jag tror inte det i alla fall.
Det tror inte jag heller.
Men hans känsloutspel kom ju där som ett brev på posten eller kanske som en rakare beställning från undertecknad. Sen tycker säkert många om mycket vad gäller framförandet, syftet kanske och ifall det finns andra forum än TV att rikta sin kritik mot domarkåren och i synnerhet Johnny Stav på. Så kan det säkert vara. Jag kanske kan berätta vad det var för någonting också. Det var ju ett voltstartslopp där på Jägersro förra lördagen då han tyckte att volten låg helt fel av Conrad Logar som ledde volten. Och han därmed fick rätt liten chans att vända på och därmed också sinkade så att skulle få en bra start med Miley. Han satt ju där och gestikulerade vilt i volten. Det ser man inte så ofta, David.
Nej, han var väldigt upprörd och jag trodde först att det var något värre som hade hänt. För att jag kan inte säga hur Robert Berg upplevde. Däremot tyckte jag att om det var måldomar eller barndomar, jag sa alltid fel på det där. Men han som uttalade sig i intervjun efter att jag såg att han kändes väldigt bra, väldigt korrekt i sina svar, väldigt tydlig. Och det här la sig lite grann sen. Det blev liksom inte någon riktig uppföljning på det. Däremot gillade jag också Bergs utspel och hur han upplevde det.
Ja, jag uppfattar nog lite.
Alltså, om man jämför måldomaren, hur måldomaren på Romme var där med den här geningen, så var det här liksom en kille som kände som att han hade koll på grejerna. Fick jätteförtroende för honom.
Jag uppfattar lite grann som de i TV-rutan också, eller de personalen som jobbade med sändningen där, att han inte hörde startkommando. Det var nästan den feeling man fick med tanke på vädret som var
ja, där. Men då hörde alla andra där, för det var bara han som
hade precis. Hört det. Ja, precis. Och det var nog inte så. Eller det var ju inte så. Men det jag vill säga är att det hände någonting där äntligen i känsloväg. Äntligen! Ja. Man visar att man är på elitnivå, David. Det är stora pengar man kör om. Det är jätteomsättning på V75. Adrenalinet kan pumpa under ett travlopp, efter ett travlopp. Så befriande att se de där känslorna från Robban i den där tv-intervjun som man gör efteråt. Sen om det är Robert Berg som är förbannad över att Conrad Logauer leder volten fel och att man inte gör någonting åt det och han får inte få chansen. Eller om det handlar om, som för någon vecka sedan, en överlycklig tränare där till... Pappa Jonnys Ilse, vad heter han? Borde kunna namnet. Mikael Eriksson heter han så.
Ja, precis, precis.
Som är överlycklig. Också helt underbart att se. Det är de där känslor man vill ha fram i tv-rutan som jag tycker att vi saknar så ofta. Men det här var uppfriskande. Robert Bergs utspel där. När det pumpar, man känner sporten, man känner hans adrenalin framför tv-rutan. Love it! Hoppas vi får mer av den varan framöver också.
Håller med helt, håller med helt.
Jag hissar Robert Berg.
Ja. Då ska jag dissa. Jag vet inte hur jag ska uttrycka mig riktigt, men jag blev lite besviken på Kai Widell igår. Menar, alla kan ha misstag och så vidare, men han sitter alltså i ryggledaren med Jamaica Boko. Claes Sjöström sitter i dödens, han ser sig på väg att tröttna. Kai sitter väldigt nära situationen och borde kunna bedöma liksom hur nära Claes Sjöströms hästen är. Han kör på den galopperar. Kai tar sig ut. Det är första felet att han kör på den. Det kan hända en olycka ju, så det är ju aldrig bra liksom.
Nej.
Men sen när han väl har liksom insett att han kört på, så är han ändå där och manar på sin häst och gör så att den vinner. Mm. Om det är så att han kör på den och han känner sig ganska säker på att han har kört över en häst, då kan han ju bara glida med och bli trea och inte bli diskad. Men nu tjänar han ju på den situationen. Så blir han diskad.
Jag men tar han inte en råd, David?
Jo, men det kanske han gör. Han kanske chansar. Men han sa i intervjun efteråt att det var helt rätt att han diskades. Vilket jag hyllar honom för. Mm. Att han är liksom så pass rek och säger som det är. Men jag landar ändå i att jag menar, och så rutinär som han är, och man ser riktigt att han tittar och kollar ner liksom på Claes häst,
ja,
och
klipper
den ändå. Mm. Och sen så är det så uppenbart att han måste ju höra att han touchar i den hästens ben och han ser att den galopperar. Och ändå då måste han känna att okej, jag kommer bli diskad för det är så uppenbart case. Mm. Jag får glida in som trea bara. Även om man vill vinna och man vill gissa och så vidare, men jag vet inte, jag tycker att han har kört så pass mycket lopp att han borde kunna hantera hela den situationen bättre.
Mm. Bra David. Mm. Vi ska faktiskt tacka för den här veckan och påminna om Twitchen igen på lördag klockan 13.00. Vi kör ju där som vanligt med en mycket matig genomgång tillsammans med våra följare helt enkelt, de som är med i chatten.
Mm, och vi har ju lite andra speltips där, lite tennis bland annat som vi hade lekstuga med förra veckan. Jag tror det är 5-5 förra Twitch-sändningen. Ja. Mm. Och vill man spela Vechtemås så är det på spel- och lekkontoret på atg.se. Så ska jag lova att jag hade alla mina fel på V75 förra lördagen. Det kommer jag inte ha på lördag.
Nej. Och tror ni där ute på Saren Fass, då vet ni vem system ni köper på lördag. Okej?
Okay? Okej.
Okay. Vi hörs David, ha det så gott.
Det. Detsamma.
Alla
tack.
Ni andra ute också. Hej då.
Hej hej.